A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
G'day everybody, Aaron Noonan here. Great to have you with me again for another episode of the V8 Sleuth Podcast powered by Repco. My guest this week on the podcast is a guy who we have had on the podcast before. Dick Johnson, of course, is the three-time Bathurst 1000 winner, five-time Australian Touring Car Champ, squillion-time Queensland Touring Car Champion, and Queensland Cultural Icon. You might think, hang on a minute, you've talked to him before. We've heard this one before. No. Different episode, same guys. In 2019, we spoke with Dick in his office, actually, at DJR. Or DJR Team Penske, as it was then, while we were researching the history of the cars for our DJR car history book. This time, though, Dick and I focused pretty much just on Bathurst. So highlights, lowlights, everything in between lights, all sorts of stuff along the journey of his amazing association and career with the mountain and the great race that, well, it's normally every October, but this year, of course, it's early December. Listen out too in this podcast too, because we've got the details of an awesome competition from Repco. You could win a DJR Ford Mustang road car. It is a serious bit of kit, and all the details are in the podcast. So here we go. Buckle up. Time to start. Dick Johnson on the V8 Sleuth Podcast powered by Repco.
Dick Johnson, been a little while since we've seen you, my friend. 2 years since we did the podcast chat. We did the cars book last year. COVID and all that crap means we're talking through a computer, but we're going to be seeing you in person somewhere sometime soon, mate. But how are you travelling? Good to see you, mate.
Mate, 2 years later, I'm still the same. So, you
know. That's good. It's good, mate. It's very good. The other thing that springs to mind here, and we're going to talk a bunch of Bathurst memories because we're on the lead up to Repco Bathurst 1000 for December, which sounds a bit strange to say that, but I'm stoked that we've got a Bathurst.
We've been later in the year before.
Yeah, true. We've had a few Novembers over the journey, didn't we? And
it's going to test some of the drivers, I can tell you, mate. We'll see who's been exercising in a sauna because it gets pretty hot around there in December, I can tell you.
I reckon I'll pack the shorts more than the pants for Bathurst this year. But it sprung to we're going to talk a bit about Bathurst and obviously some of the great moments. And you've probably talked ad nauseum at them over the years, but there's so many things that I know the fans this time of year love to talk about. But it's 40 years, mate, since that first win in 81 in the True Blue XD. Time's flowing. What's going on?
Oh, mate, 40 years ago, my goodness. On the 5th of October, I gave Frenchie a ring and I said, listen, mate, I said, do you know what happened 40 years ago today? And he said, no, what? I said, we won Bathurst. He said, you're kidding. And I said, no, I'm serious. Again, he's now 91.
He's a weapon, isn't he? He's a ripper. He's
just a brilliant, brilliant guy.
So the way that it rolls in 2021, obviously we've got a bit of a weird build-up to Bathurst this year with all the racing in Sydney, which is great that we're going to get some racing going again. But take me back to 81. I mean, you've got a fully huge workshop there with lots of people prepping two cars and marketing staff and all the other bits and pieces. There's a pile of people there, but in 81, how many people did you have to get that car ready to go up to Bathurst to win that race?
I had one full-time guy, which was Roy McDonald, who was with me, had been with me since, around about 1967. And Roy Boy retired a few years back now. And he was the one and only team member that was, you know, a part of the paid team, shall we say, and a mate of mine, Leon, and my brother, and we were the ones that put the whole thing together. And obviously we had a few guys that we'd take down to Bathurst to be able to do the pit stops and things like that and sort of do, you know, bits and pieces around the way. But it was, you know, it was a very, very much a family orientated thing, which it still is today, but at a much different level.
So you were driving, you were helping prep the car. Were you wheeling and dealing on sponsors and all that stuff, or what was going on?
Yeah, I was it, you know. And Julie, she used to, because it was in the garage at home at Daisy Hill, where we'd prep the car and everything like that. And we'd work till probably 11, 12 o'clock at night, and we'd be back there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Julie used to come and bring down all the food for all the boys. She'd cook dinner for everyone, and we'd sit down and have dinner. And probably 11:30, we'd open a couple of cans of beer and then go and crash into bed for a few hours and come back the next morning. But Yeah, it was just a real good bunch of people we had.
Were there any mistakes made because of the bleary eyes or too many beverages at 11:30 at night? Anything that was left not quite done?
No. We're talking, you know, a beer, possibly nothing more than that. And because I used to build all the engines and gearboxes and stuff like that, and obviously Roy and I used to prep the car and actually built the car.
I was going to say, Will and Anton, no chance of those boys prepping and running and building anything of their own for Bathurst this year. They need all the help they can get, those two. I'm not sure that they've got the most mechanical skills that would help them with the modern-day supercar bloke being able to prep their own car and get it ready for the big one.
Well, that's what used to help me an awful lot, being able to know what I could do with the car and what you couldn't, because I understood exactly what was going on. And that's probably what some of the drivers of today lack a little bit is, shall we call it, mechanical sympathy, if you know what I mean. But yes, those cars, they're going back in the True Blue days and things like that with the XD and the XE, you know, they were hotted up road cars, where the cars today are totally different. They're purpose built. But at the end of the day, when you have a look at it and say, well, you know, these things, which, you know, on every other day of the week, or a taxi, and we want to go and run 1,000 kilometres around Bathurst flat out. Well, it doesn't quite work that way. You've got to be, you know, very kind to the equipment.
Yeah, there were some who were better at it than others back in those days. But you talked about hotted up road cars, and one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to you and talk about the 40th anniversary of your first Bathurst win is that there's a really cool comp with our mates at Repco who are actually giving away a DJR 40th anniversary Mustang. Correct. It's been developed and tuned by your good mate Rob Herod, who's done so many cool cars over the years. Yep. It's valued at 140,000 Oz, 180 for our Kiwi friends, including the on-road costs. Give us a quick take. I'll tell our listeners how they can get involved in this comp soon, but give us the quick take on what this car is that someone's going to win, because it is a pretty special bit of kit.
It is a very special bit of kit, I can assure you, Nunes. It's a supercharged Coyote V8, which the Mustang comes with a Coyote engine in it, and it's got just over 600 horsepower, so it's no slouch, I could tell you. And a lot of other little bits and pieces that, you know, the Herod, Robbie Herod does to these things, which makes it a very, very unique piece of equipment. And I'm proud to say that to have our name on something like that, Robbie built some really, really good cars. And he's done some good cars for, like, limited editions for us in the past, and they've been extremely successful. And I think this will be a special one.
What other features has this thing got that people are going to really, really enjoy?
Well, let's put it this way. This particular car, the colour of it, which is a special blue, it is the only one of that colour that will ever be produced, because it's a special colour and nobody else's. The later model cars won't have that colour on them at all. So it's a one-off.
It's very much a one-off, and it's going to be able to be won by a fan. So the synergy here is perfect, because it's the 40th anniversary of your first Bathurst win. It's blue, as the True Blue car was. Okay, it's not a Falcon Mustang. That's the current thing that's being run. It's a competition that's going to run right throughout the month of November, leading up to the Repco Bathurst 1000 at the Mountain. It's going to be drawn on the 2nd of December, and it'll be announced the winner at that stage as well. Who's going to win this very limited edition Mustang? The way you can do it, we'll give our listeners the quick take. You can register with the garage, of course, Repco's website, that's got all sorts of cool automotive and motorsport content. So that's repco.com.au/the garage. Join up there. There's a bunch of Dick Johnson memorable Bathurst moments. Pick your favourite one. You can't vote on this, by the way. You can't keep going in there and picking all your favourite moments from over the past. So once you enter your details there, you get an entry into the comp. And if you're a Repco Ignition member, for every $30 you spend in-store or online, you'll get an entry into the comp. So there's plenty of good ways to enter, to really not do much to win a pretty awesome bit of kit worth about 150 grand.
It's an awesome bit of kit, all right, and I'm sort of really looking forward to being part of the promotion for it, because it's something that, goddamn, I wish I had the opportunity of winning something like that.
Well, there's only one, mate. Sorry, we can't go and get you another one. Sorry, you've got yourself in a corner there. There's one only. We can't have two. Yeah. That's just How it's got to be, how it's got to be. The fans are going to get to vote on some of your big moments at Bathurst over the years on the Garage website to be able to get themselves into the draw to win this car. Obviously, the wins are the moments that really stick out to everyone and, of course, to yourself. There's three of them along the way. There's the rock and the tree and all the other bits and pieces along the way. But were there any races over the years at Bathurst that, or results that might not have been a win, but they were very satisfying because you had to fight your way through, or it was a result against the odds, or you did the best you could do with what you had that day? Are there any of those other races that kind of might not pop up in that list that are special to you?
Well, Nunes, you've only got to say 92 would have been pretty special, wouldn't it? In the weather we had and everything, I think it was a pretty special day, I think, to be able to win Bathurst. But when you have these memories, when you know damn well, especially 89, to me, would have been probably the most perfect Bathurst we had, because we had so many different elements to that event where, and I know it wasn't in a Falcon, it was in the Sierra, but we had led every single lap of the race, even during pit stops, and it was just very gratifying to and as I said to everyone about that event, that I don't think we've ever run such a perfect Bathurst with the team. You know, it's all about the people you've got with you, that we made the right decisions at the right time, put the right tyres on at the right time, everything like that, and it paid off in the end.
With the 89 win, the race was, I mean, you'd led across the line every lap. Brock led the first half of the first lap, but you blew him away down Conrod Straight, and you and JV carried on and kept on rolling on to win that one. The 92 one was the one with all the rain and the drama and the four-wheel drive Nissans you're up against, and poor Denny Holm passed away that day too to make that one a strange, difficult day for so many people as well. One of the other things that's really interesting, the vision and the commentary of those moments and those wins, the rock and the trees and the winds and the poles, they're burnt in everyone's memory bank. But there's a couple of your great moments that we just don't have vision of, because you put the Falcon through the trees, so there's no in-car because someone forgot to press the button to record
Charlie.
It.
His name was Charlie. I remember he was the camera operator in the OB van, mate, and he stood there with the joystick and he unfortunately forgot to push record.
Would have been some of the most famous in-car vision ever captured, and knocked Peter Williamson off his tree for the in-car chat. But the other one I remember too is, do you remember in 94 when JB was obviously fighting Lowndes and there's no vision from inside his car for special reason? Do you remember why?
He was having a bit of a moment, I think. But he, we can't disclose anything about JB, mate. You know, he's very...
Well, the camera had gone completely bananas and just kept spinning round and round and round and round and around.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why that happened. It was obviously a technical glitch somewhere, but I'll never forget getting on the radio to JB towards the end of that race when Lowndes was sort of hunting him down and actually passed him into turn two at the top of Mountain Straight there. And I got on the radio to him and I said, JB, This is a kid you're playing with here. Like, you're not going to get the famous John Bow is going to get beaten by a kid. You've got to be kidding, mate. Get your finger out. And that's fortunately when he actually blew him off down, I think it was Pitt Straight there into turn one.
I'll always remember that vision of you standing on the pit wall as he roared on by to get that win. It just worked out in a weird way, and I'm sure you don't care because you won the race and it was all about the team, but you weren't in the car to take the checkered flag in any of your Bathurst wins, but you don't really worry about that, do you?
No, it's not about that. It's about the team. It's you got to put your best foot forward at the right time and things like that. And the race, the start of the race was wet, and JB was nowhere to be found. He disappeared, he thought, and Ross Stone said, I got to find JB because, you know, Dick wants him to start the race. I said, yeah, of course I do, you know, because that's his forte doing this. And so that's how that started. And we found him. He was locked himself in one of those portaloos out the back somewhere. So, but we sorted that out and he got in the car and did what JB always does. A fantastic job.
It worked out right in the end. So he started and he finished, he started in the wet, finished in the dry and managed to overcome some snotty-nosed kid called Lowndes who threatened to upstage him there along the way. But what was the first time? Obviously, everyone remembers your Bathurst starts in the great race, but what's the first time you ever went there? Did you go as a punter to an Easter meeting or something like that when you were a younger bloke?
I think, about 1964, we used to sit up on the hill. We'd drive down on Friday night. We'd sleep in the car over the weekend and drive back Sunday night and start work again on Monday morning. So after work Friday, we'd head off and get down to Bathurst. And, it was every single year, mate. But that's the only time I've ever missed Bathurst was last year because of the COVID thing. That was the only time I've missed it since 64, 60, whenever it first started.
I think for many people who missed last year, it's kind of – I don't think we count it as breaking everybody's streak because it broke everyone's streak. So I think it's an asterisk year and everyone can keep their streak going this year is probably
It all depends on Pelichuk up here to see if we get to the point where we can get back in. You know, that's the biggest problem.
No, 2 years in a row at Bathurst without Dick Johnson can't be the way to go. Wasn't there a year two where the big crash, was it 69 at the top of the mountain where all the cars just started ploughing into one another on the first lap and you were over the fence there helping your mate Frenchie sort himself out?
Yeah, he was in an Alpha and I was – Julie and I were with his wife, Mari French, and we were sort of standing just up from the dipper, the corner before the dipper, and after they come over Skyline and we saw this car come over the Skyline upside down. I said, gee, this is going to be interesting. And sure enough, there's cars going everywhere. And Frenchie ended up on his lid with this, and all I saw was all this red stuff running out of the car. And I'm like, God damn, like, see, he's got to be hurt or something. So I leapt over the fence to drag him out of the car. And then realised it was only the coolant was in the radiator of the Alpha that was sort of running out of the car. So fortunately, Frenchie was fine.
That's taking audience participation to new extremes, new levels.
Exactly. You imagine what his wife was feeling like while she was standing there watching all this transpire.
Thankfully, things have come a bit further in safety and equipment and roll cages and trackside stuff and all that stuff. But back in those days, mate, you look at the vision, even the development from when the place was first opened to when the Enduro in the 60s started, it got a lot better. But even 60s to now, it's just scary to think that you could have one little mistake and you were off the edge.
Well, I remember John Roxburgh ended up, before he dropped over McPhillamy, he had it coming together with a car, and he ended up rolling down over to the inside and ended up rolling down into the winery way the hell down that hill. I reckon he must have rolled about 50 times. It's amazing. And then Tony Roberts, who came over Skyline and ran out of brakes, went straight ahead just before the dipper over the fence and into the trees. Like, you'd think I've been in the trees. A few guys have been in the trees at Bathurst.
Yeah, you're not the only one. You did have a good crack at it, but you weren't the only one who had a go at that over the years.
Well, that was only because of the so-called safety equipment that was there, you know, which I thought was pretty average. The safety equipment there was at the end of the wall coming out of Forest Elbow, that there was a bunch of tyres which were there for people coming up the other way every other day of the year. And trouble is that they were full of concrete. So I sort of, you know, you touch the wall when you sort of, having to qualify, you was using every bit of the road and some. And when I got to the end of the wall, it just grabbed hold of the front wheel and broke the tie rod off. And then it landed on that wheel and headed into the bush. And I thought, I could be in trouble here. And fortunately, the car was a bit secondhand, but I was fine.
Yeah, you were a very lucky chap to get out of that one. That's
extremely lucky,
sure.
Mate.
I got a feeling that might pop up in the list of Dick Johnson moments on the Garage website that fans can vote on to win that 40th anniversary Ford Mustang. Got a funny feeling it's a bit hard to leave that one out when you do DJ classic Bathurst moments because it sort of stands up there and stands out there. But, I mean, for all the years you've been around and you've been stopped in the street, in service stations, airports, you name it, what's the biggest topic that you get asked about or people retell back to you the most? Is it the rock? Is it the trees? Is it winning Bathurst? what's the thing that most of all people come back to you with?
Well, the rock was a pretty big thing because, you know, even a policeman at one stage when we were driving back from Roy and I in the truck, because we used to drive the truck, we'd live in the truck going to the race meetings in the 80s. Anyway, Roy and I were coming back through Holbrook on the Hume Highway there, and we went through this radar trap that I didn't know was a radar trap, and this policeman jumped out in front of me and waved me down. The brakes went all that flash on the old F truck with the van on the back, and I stopped about 400, 500 metres down the road, and anyway, I sat there and nobody turned up, and I said, "Oh, Roy, they must have been waving at somebody else." So I just stuck it into gear and took off. Well, you know, about 10 k's down the road, there's a police car coming in the opposite direction with lights flashing and all sorts of things going, and he swings around and then pulls us over, and he comes up and he said, "You know that you went through a radar trap there and you were speeding." I said, "No, I didn't believe that." So he said, I'm going to radio back and see what speed you were doing." So he radios back, and obviously the speed I was doing was a bit much for this young bloke to handle. And he said, "Gee, Sarge, you better come up here and handle that one." Well, Roy and I are sitting in the truck absolutely, you know, think we're going to be in jail here, mate, because neither of us had a license anyway. An articulated license. We had, you know, our car license, but anyway, as this policeman sort of rocks up about 15 minutes later, and I always got the habit of jumping out and sort of meeting them along the way. And this policeman said, "Dickie Johnson, eh?" He said, "I thought it might have been you." He said, "You know," he said, "I gave you $10 after Bathurst last year." And I said, "What are you trying to do? Take it back off me." And as it turns out, mate, we had a great conversation, and he sent us on our way. He said, "You better get your mate to drive." And poor old Roy's absolutely cacking himself because he didn't have a license either for the articulated vehicle that we were driving. So, but we got to Warren Park because we were headed to Warren Park after being at Calder. And as it turns out, the guy at the end of pit lane, the paddle pop man at the end of pit lane, he was one of the driving instructors, or should I say licensed men, from Camden, and we went down Monday morning and got our license. So
so being Dick Johnson does get you out of a few bits of trouble along the journey.
Look, you know, I don't do anything stupid, but, yeah, I've been very fortunate over a number of years, and, you know, touch wood, mate, I've to this day still haven't lost my license.
Good man. Nice effort. Well played. Yeah. Well played. We talked about the 40th anniversary and the 81, the Mustang that's up for grabs for the competition during the month of November. That true blue car, why did you go blue? Was it purely because it was the sponsor that drove it that way, or was it a Ford because it was a Ford, or it all just clicked together that it ended up that way?
Well, Ross Palmer from Palmer Tube Bills, as you know, he was marketing this product called True Blue Steel. And it was painted blue because originally all that RHS square tubing was all just black or oily and that, and you'd get filthy trying to handle the stuff and everything. And so he created this program where the stuff would be clean and then painted online as it came off. And it was what they call true blue. And it was a marketing campaign. It was extremely successful for him. And that it continued on to the green stuff and red roux and all the other stuff that went with it. So that's how it was blue. Simple as that.
Pretty simple story, isn't it, really? Yeah. 81, when you win Bathurst, is there a big party back in the day after it, or did everyone just pack up and go home and move on to the next thing?
Well, back in the day, as you say, Bathurst was that was the end of the year. That was the finale of everything motorsport in Australia, really, as far as touring cars go. You know, you'd have the championship where they'd have the touring car championship series, and then they'd go into what they call the endurance series, which was a couple of longer races with Sandown, Bathurst, and I think another one at Oran Park. You know, so that's where it was sort of, and Surface Paradise, of course, you know, and later in the time we used to have Surface Paradise later in the year.
These days, I mean, it's different this year because Bathurst is the last round. In the past, it's kind of nearly the last round, but we've still got a Gold Coast and Newcastle or whatever else we've had at the back end of a year. So
New Zealand.
Yeah, it's just the way of that everything's evolved, that they pack the tracks up, they pack the gear in, and everyone heads on down the road and goes back to home base and gets ready for the next one. Whereas, as you said, like, it was kind of the end of it. So there was a bit more of an opportunity for everyone to stop and decompress for a night with a couple of beverages. And was it more pally back then between the teams when the race was off? The swords were down and, all right, we'll go and have a beer with, you know, whether it was Brock's team or the Nissan team or whoever it was?
Correct. You know, after all the races, you know, we'd sort of get together and go to places like, you know, we'd go to a nightclub of some, well, you know, what they call a nightclub, because all those guys used to be sort of motor racing fans, and they'd say, oh, we'll come and have a drink at our place and all that. So, you know, Brock would and I would and quite a number of the other guys, you know, Bryce and them, they'd all rock up to a nightclub type joint and have a few drinks. But Bathurst, you know, as I say, was virtually the last race of the year. And now the one thing with Frenchy, because the XD and the XE had this really deep console, and Frenchy was always good on the tooth, you know, he loved eating, and he'd make these little Vegemite sandwiches and some quarts of oranges and stuff like that, and he'd put them in the console, and while he's coming down Conrod and that, he'd grab one out and have a bit of a chew and have a Vegemite sandwich and a quart of an orange or something like that, just to keep him motivated. And the reason that I knew how much stuff he used to put in there is because we'd probably pack the car up after Bathurst and leave it in the truck for a few days and then chuck it in the garage and come back in a couple of weeks and start sort of looking at what we're going to do. And I think, what's that stink? God damn. Yeah, it was Frenchy's food that he had in the console of the car.
I think a lot of people think they've heard that story over the years about Frenchy and his food, that it's all pulling people's legs, but it's absolutely legit. That's what he did.
Absolutely.
Probably should clear it out at the end of each race as part of the service to the team, I would have thought. But we've talked about some of the big ticket moments and cars and wins and stuff. They'll be in these moments on the Garage website that fans can vote on to get their entry into to win this 40th anniversary Mustang. But I mean, we can't talk about that 81 win and the amazing way that, you know, you won that race with a car that was kind of the people's car because of the people that put their money up after the year before. And it's a story that we'll never see again. There'll be never anything come close to anything like that. It's a really special place in history. I think that's why people so feel, you know, that you've got a lot of fans and a lot of love out there, but people feel really strongly connected to that particular win 40 years ago because they all had a little bit of a part in playing to that.
Well, it's just the motivation that we had. Like, I don't think there was any other year in motorsport where I felt as much pressure after what had happened in 1980 with everyone sort of, a lot of people, you know, donating money and stuff to me to keep the thing going and get up and running again for the following year. And 1981 for me was one hell of a year as far as pressure goes. And even to the point where we, Brocky and I, went into Lakeside, which was the final round of the Touring Car Championship, and we were separated by 1 point. And whoever beat who was going to be the champion. And I don't think I've ever seen a crowd at Lakeside like that ever since. It was just amazing. We never got out of there till 11 o'clock at night. It just took so long to get out of the place. But fortunately for me, Lakeside was without a doubt one of my most favourite, still is today, racetracks. And on about lap three, it broke a front sway bar, so it wasn't exactly the best car I'd ever driven, but it was just the support we had from all those people that wouldn't let me sort of say, no, I can't give up, I've got to keep going.
If everyone who's come up to you over the 40 years since, who's told you that they stuck in and sent you some money, I reckon if you did the sums, I reckon it would add up to far more money than was actually donated. I reckon there's probably a few people who've put a bit of extra sauce on that over the years.
Probably, but at the end of the day, you know, I was always very appreciative of those people, and I told them that their investment was spent very wisely, I can assure you. But it really was heartwarming to see that even some of the kids would empty their little money boxes and things like that. It was just, and the letters, I still got all the letters today, mate, so... Yeah, pretty special.
I've seen photos from you with these letters. I think it might have been at Channel 7's offices even. Yep. And it's not just a box. There were literally stacks and piles to the point where they were filling shopping trolleys full of mail. It was unbelievable.
It was. And at Daisy Hill, I used to have, you know, obviously everyone's got a letterbox, but I used to have the PMG van, what was then, they used to back up to my front door and give me these big canvas bags full of letters, which was just amazing.
These days, email makes life so much quicker. It's
just for you guys.
Yeah. No, that is.
In some ways, only in some ways.
Yeah, technology has made some things better and it's made some things worse over the course of the journey as well. Bathurst this year, mate, obviously it's a bit different to how we've had it in the past, but it actually takes me back a little bit, and I want to talk to you about this because everyone's made a big deal about how it's going to be 6 days this year and it's going to start on Tuesday and there's all the other categories that are going to be running there, the S5000s and TCM and all that stuff that was going to be at another separate event. But it's not a new thing for us to start a Bathurst. I mean, we've really been Thursday onwards for many years, but back in the day, practice started on Wednesday, untimed, didn't it?
Yep. Yeah, too right. We used to be there the weekend before, so it was at least a whole week of sort of preparing and setting yourself up and just basically getting on track and getting the car set up. But originally, the first Bathurst that I ever raced in was in 1973 with Bob Forbes, and we actually got there on Saturday morning. Early Saturday morning, I was at Shell Garage in Orange, still welding up the exhaust on it. And it used to be you'd practice on Saturday, you would sort of kind of have a practice or two practice or whatever it was, then you'd be qualifying and then into the race, mate. That was it. Sunday was a race. So it sort of then got blown out because when Ivan Sibbard from the ARDC, you know, started really activating Bathurst as a big event, which it was, and it just got grew and grew with, you know, with television and everything, and it got to the point where it expanded to many, many days. It started Wednesday, finished Sunday.
Yeah, we're sort of going back to a bit of the past is coming back a little bit over the course of what we're going
to
get up there.
Back to the future, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've got this thing where we keep doing this. What's old is new again. It's...
Never changed, mate, even in fashion, I can tell you.
Yeah. No, most definitely. Tell me how different, obviously, the colours are the same, the sponsors are the same on the Mustangs that are going there this year. Of course, it's back to Dick Johnson Racing now from the amazing period that you had with Roger Penske and Tim Sindrick and those guys and the championships and the bits. For you going to Bathurst this year as a team, is there anything different? You got pretty much all the same faces. You got a couple of new drivers, obviously there, but it's the same spirit and it's the same heart that team lives on. Is Bathurst is so special?
Well, yeah, and I think all the same guys. I mean, we've got the same, a very stable bunch of people in our team, and which even goes to show you that the time that we spent since this COVID thing has sort of been here. There's not one day that our guys weren't, you know, fully, they were never on any limited pay or time or anything. They were always at work 24/7 the way they normally are. And that's just the nature of our team. We try and look after our guys and they really appreciate that because it really stems back to where, you know, we were a family team, a sort of family operated arrangement. And we still keep that environment around us today.
Yeah, it's served you very well over the journey, mate, that's for sure. Yeah. You're going to Bathurst with Larry Perkins' number this year, though, the number 11. It's been successful for him. 17's been good for you. You're going with the two Titan numbers up there this year with those two cars of yours.
Well, it is, you know, and when you sort of look at it, because we had a bit of a thing with Larry, and I asked him, you know, is it okay if we use his number? And he was really chuffed because he drove with me back in 86. And to be quite honest, I think it was a good thing to be able to just give him the courtesy of asking if that's okay. And the reason we went to number 11 is because we asked Anton what number would he like to have. And he said, well, the first number or the best number I ever had when I was overseas was number 11. He said, well, we'll see if we can get it. And that's why it turned up like that.
Oh, well, it worked out. Well, I think Larry won 3 with 11 and you won 3 with 17. So you might have to break a deadlock there this year, which good problem to have, isn't it? Good problem to have.
You're right.
Now, if your team does win Bathurst this year, does the Doc, Ryan Storey, get to go out and get the team's trophy? Is he all up for that straight away, or is there someone else? Do you predetermine those sorts of things before you get there, or is it on a spur of the moment just before you go out and make a call on who gets
it? It's just a spur of the moment thing, and, you know, like, it could be anyone, to be quite honest. It's a pretty special thing, really, to do that. And there's nobody would deserve it more than Ryan, to be quite honest, in my eyes, because he's a guy who's been supporting me for many, many years, even as a kid. But not only that, he's the guy that has turned this place around and made it what it is today.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. Wasn't he a kid that rolled up to you at Mallard for an autograph, and then many moons ago he started sponsoring your team, and then, you know, he's just got more and more involved from there?
Well, this is why I never sort of reject anyone who wants an autograph, for the simple reason that he got rejected by another driver somewhere along the line, and that sort of stuck with him ever since. So I think it's very important for the drivers to sort of just think a little bit about how they would feel if they got rejected.
So, tip for all the current drivers, sign every autograph you get asked, because you never know. That kid one day down the track might come in handy to know somewhere along the line and get well and truly involved. You never know.
The ones you meet on the way up, you'll probably meet them on the way down. So.
Hey, what's the you've signed literally thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of autographs over the years. I've asked this of a few people. What's the strangest thing you've ever signed?
Oh, no, I wouldn't go there if I were you.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, what's the third strangest thing or fourth strangest thing that's G-rated or PG-rated? Mate.
Well, there's all sorts of things, mate, that you'd be surprised, you know, at people just bring stuff to you and you know, will you sign this, will you sign this? Like, and I've just lost count of some of the stuff that I've signed. And yeah, some of it's embarrassing. And I never knock it back for the simple reason, because if somebody comes to you with some weird request and they're somewhat intoxicated or something like that, you're better off saying, okay, I'll do that, and then they'll go away and they're happy and they're peaceful. But if you sort of reject them, all of a sudden you've got a fight on your hands. So I'll just do it and sort of get on with it.
Are there plenty of people who've come back to you with Dick Johnson autographs that became tattoos?
Oh, mate, I've signed guys, and even in recent times, like very recently, earlier this year, at one of the last races I was at, and this guy came up and said, you know, can you sign my thing? And I said, yeah, sure, mate. And I did. And he came back the next morning and he had it tattooed. So, and I've got guys that have got my helmet tattooed on their arm and a face on their back, and like, crazy.
Next level. It's passion personified, isn't it? It's a whole other level.
Yeah, it's brilliant, mate. It's what, you know, if that's what makes them happy, good on them.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, mate. Mate, we can't wait to get the Supercast back up to Bathurst. We can't wait to see who wins this comp either, because the 40th anniversary DJ Mustang is up for grabs. It's worth 140,000 Aussie bucks, 180,000 if you're in the Kiwi money across the other side of the ditch. You can enter it to win it, get yourself into the draw, go to the Garage website and join up there. You'll get an entry into things. If you're an Ignition member, you spend 30 bucks, or for every 30 bucks you spend, you'll get an entry into the draw. So jump on online or in store to spend some money. Pretty cheap investment to win a pretty cool car worth a pretty cool amount of money. So I reckon for this month of November in 2021, the comp closes on the 30th, so just as we start at Bathurst for the Repco Bathurst 1000. This is a pretty damn good deal all around. This is a pretty awesome bit of kit. In a word, how do we describe this car?
Mate, it's a one-off. It's extremely special. It's got 600 horsepower, like I said, and a lot of other stuff that goes with it. It's got special wheels and all that sort of stuff. So it's a one-off blue car, and it's the colour blue that it is. You'll never see another one the same colour because it's one-off.
The car's a one-off, the comp's a one-off, you're a one-off. DJ, great to catch up with you and join us on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. We hope to see you at the mountain for another big war up there between the Mustangs and the Commodores as they go at it.
Mate, I can't wait because my early days as an employee, I worked for Repco. So that goes back a long, long way. So to still be here today, and with the same people with Repco and Shell and that, it's just magnificent. And Repco are doing an unbelievable job with all their stuff they're doing with motor racing. It's fabulous. And I'm proud to say they're part of our team.
Mate, great to chat to you, and we'll catch up with you soon. And hopefully there's one very, very happy winner when this is drawn on the 2nd of December in 2021, but we'll see you soon.
Look forward to it, buddy. Cheers.
There he is, Dick Johnson, the Bathurst and Australian touring car legend. It was great to catch up with him. It's been a long time since I've seen DJ in person. Computer screens and Zooms and the like, just not the same, but great to catch up with him and hear some stories from the past from the great race and his amazing history with Bathurst. Don't forget, too, the Repco competition that we spoke about during the podcast. If you want to be able to get to the link to that, simply go to our show notes for this episode. That'll link you through to the competition page in the Repco Garage website. So jump on the show notes of this podcast and that'll guide you there. Tomorrow, Thursday, Castrol Motorsport News Podcast is back with Andrew Van Leeuwen. Subscribe if you haven't already. F2 is coming up this week. And I tell you what, it's been a big week in news. A lot of it away from the track rather than on the track. But the latest in news from motorsport of all sorts, supercars, Formula One, plenty more. Make sure you subscribe to the Castrol News Podcast so you don't miss an episode. Speaking of not missing, the clock's ticking. Can you hear it? Do you know what's coming? Christmas. It's on the horizon. And that means Christmas presents. And that means coming up with Christmas present ideas for people. That means we're here to help. bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au. An amazing array of books in our library. Very few copies left of the Perkins Engineering Car History book. It's going really fast. It's limited to just 2,500 copies. Don't miss out. We have our Bathurst 90s book about to come in stock as well. That's got a photo of every car from every year of the 90s. It's a unique piece of Bathurst history. Subscribe to our newsletter through the V8 Sleuth website so you get alerted to all sorts of news updates and product updates and all sorts of details. And follow us on the socials. Hey, ping us too. Give us messages via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our Contact Us page on the website. We love to hear from our listeners and the fans of all things motorsport and V8 Sleuth. So keep in touch with us as we roll through this very big back end of the year on the road to Bathurst and, of course, the road to Christmas as well. Well, that's it. Dick Johnson, wasn't that great? Love catching up with the legend here on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Don't forget, next Tuesday as well, Repco Supercars Weekly. We'll have the wash-up from this weekend's round of the supercars at Sydney Motorsport Park, the second of four of those. We've got some good chats lined up. One of my upcoming guests has just written a new book, but he's a guy who's been around broadcasting for a very long time. He's been heavily involved in media, did a little bit of racing himself, and once upon a time, he was hip and shouldered by Kimi Raikkonen. True story, he tells it. John Smales is going to be on the V8 Sleuth podcast. It is bound to be sensational. We'll chat to you soon. Thanks for listening again. This has been the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Repco. Chat to you next time.